How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And as always, tons of stuff to talk about today. Two major national promotions running pay-per-views this weekend. UFC 115 was last night from Vancouver, headlined by Chuck Liddell coming out of retirement to face Rich Franklin. And afterwards, apparently heading right back into retirement. He was knocked out in the first round, fight that he was doing very well in. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about the entire card. It was a good card. Some good fights on the show. Not a blow-away show by any means, but we'll talk all about UFC 115. We're also going to preview the TNA Slammiversary pay-per-view, which is coming up tonight from Orlando. We'll run down all of the matches in detail, give some predictions, and of course we'll talk about some potential big surprises that are supposed to be coming very soon. There's going to be an announcement tonight on the show. And apparently there's going to be another big announcement that's slowly going to be worked in over the next couple of weeks. It was originally supposed to be one big announcement coming, but now they've kind of changed their minds about what they're going to announce. I guess Dixie has learned a lesson about all of these promises in the past about the latest huge announcement that is going to change the face of wrestling forever. We'll talk about that potential announcement and a lot of other TNA-related stories as well, including Impact this past Thursday night. Other news for today. We're going to talk about Raw versus NXT, the big brawl at the end of Monday Night Raw this past Monday night, the fallout of that. Bryan Danielson, back to being Bryan Danielson after Daniel Bryan was fired from WWE, a legitimate firing. We'll talk about why he was released, what happened, why it went down, and the possibility of him returning to WWE at some point in the future. It's a mind-boggling story when you really think about it. That's coming up later on in this show. We'll talk about SmackDown, Impact, the big La Parca versus LA Park match, which took place in Mexico this past Sunday night. Actually, a big show in the sense that there was a huge match. There was a supposedly, I can't say a decisive finish, but there was a finish. And then it became a dusty finish where they announced that the finish that happened actually wasn't the real finish. It was one of three invasion angles that took place over a two-day period. Of course, the WWE angle, the AAA angle, and the CMLL angle. We'll talk about some fallout from the last UFC, the Jeff Hardy trial, the injury to Undertaker, the Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view, and a lot more. Next 2 hours, pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We'll be back in just a moment to start the chat. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Of course, the big story of the weekend, the firing of Daniel Bryan in the wake of the brawl on Monday night. Of course, a scripted brawl between the WWE guys and the NXT guys. Actually, only one WWE guy. John Cena, attacked by everybody on NXT, led by Wade Barrett. And during the brawl on Monday night, Daniel Bryan proceeded to attack ring announcer. What's the guy's name? I already forgot.
Justin Roberts.
That's right, Justin Roberts. It's been a long weekend, everybody. Attacked Justin Roberts, ripped his shirt off, took Justin Roberts' tie, wrapped it around his neck, and proceeded to choke the life out of Justin Roberts. And unfortunately, as many of you will probably recall, Chris Benoit, when killing his family and then killing himself, did in fact choke the life out of his son. And since that time, there has been a directive in WWE, no choking allowed. You are not allowed to choke with your hands. You are not allowed to choke with the ropes. You are not allowed to choke a man out with his tie. This has been discussed internally in WWE for a while. Apparently, Daniel Bryan was unaware of this, and he choked out Justin Roberts. Apparently, there were complaints from folks outside of WWE, very, very upset that this was allowed on a PG show. Vince McMahon personally fired Bryan Danielson as a result, and I guess he was, I don't know if he was given the impression that at some point he would be brought back, But I think he was given the impression that perhaps at some point down the road we will bring you back here to the company. But certainly no timetable was given. It wasn't like, you know, wait 6 months and we'll bring you back or anything like that. It was just basically, he was basically told that at some point if things die down and if cooler heads prevail, you'll probably be allowed to come back to the company. But he was essentially a scapegoat in, I guess, the whole WWE PG deal. He was the scapegoat in this violent angle at the end of Raw and paid the price. And it's a very, very sad story. And Mike, your thoughts on Bryan Danielson losing his job?
What a bizarre, just a bizarre, bizarre story of why he would be. First of all, if I'm not mistaken, Shawn Michaels has used a crossface. The Undertaker has used a choke. Dolph Ziggler uses a sleeper hold. In the very first segment on SmackDown this week, Kane is talking about his brother who somebody put into a vegetative state and he's sitting or standing in front of a casket. For this, and yes, it was a shocking, you know, picture with things, but that's what made Monday so surprisingly great after 2 hours and 45 minutes of nothing, which was amazing, and I guess we'll get to that later. To have that angle, one of the things that really set it over the top was the carnage that was caused and Danielson doing that, and it's just, it's very bizarre. It's just a very, very bizarre story, and I guess if he is brought back, hopefully he is brought back. I guess if they have to use somebody as a scapegoat, that's fine. Actually, it's not fine, but, you know, it's, if he's going to be brought back and somehow it plays into the storyline, then that's okay. But otherwise, this is just, it's just bizarre.
It makes no sense. It was pretty much said that you should not try to make sense of this because it's pretty ridiculous. It's a tie, everybody. I mean, there were people noting that, you know, by firing Bryan Danielson in 90 days, you've just given TNA a guy who was last seen laying out the WWE champion.
There's
so many things here. I mean, as Dave mentioned on Wrestling Observer Radio last night on our website, it's one of those deals that people always talk about. You got to surprise the fans. You got to surprise the workers. One of the things about Monday night was, if you looked at the format for the show, if you looked at the script, so to speak, the format did not end with NXT guys beat up John Cena. The format did not list this at all. It merely listed the tag team match, and then, you know, it was the impression was given that something was going to happen, but they didn't tell most of the workers. They didn't tell most of the wrestlers what was going to happen. It was a big surprise. I guess the idea was that if we don't tell the workers, it won't get out on the internet. It'll be a big surprise. People will be talking about it, this and that. And of course it was, but by not telling all of the guys this, which is kind of one of those things in wrestling where they love the surprise. They love, in a sense, working the boys, and we'll get into in a little while why this is not an example of that, the firing of Bryan Danielson, but they're big on surprises and not letting word get out and that sort of thing. And by doing that, they had a segment on Raw where they did not have a rehearsal. They did not have a run-through of this NXT versus John Cena deal. And because he didn't have the run-through, Bryan Danielson got fired. Because had they done the run-through, they would have told him, look, dude, you can't choke the guy out with his tie. Think of something else. But no, they had to surprise everybody. They had to keep this secret from the wrestlers. And as a result, Bryan Danielson did something on live TV that he had no idea wasn't supposed to do. And as a result, he now has to be fired, which we'll get into the whole NXT versus WWE angle soon enough. But without Bryan Danielson, I don't know. This is going to be, you know, he would have been the cornerstone here as the best worker, the best talker. He could have made this thing work, or at least made it work significantly better than it's going to work without him, I would think. So it's just another example of you couldn't just script it and do a run through like you do with everything else. You had to make it a surprise, and now a dude lost his job.
There's no mea culpa that couldn't have been done by Vince McMahon to begin Raw that also could have played into an angle, you know, something that would, some huge apology or something like that that at least could be brought up later on in the angle. You had to get rid of the guy that, I mean, yes, Wade Barrett can be positioned as a, you know, in a pretty monstrous role, you know, Sheamus-esque, you know, even despite his lack of experience, you know, all of his lack of experience, you can position him that way. Who else do you got? I mean, the thought of Heath Slater and Gabriel as a tag team is far more, you know, makes far more sense to me than Heath Slater against John Cena. I mean, Danielson-Cena was the obvious thing, or Danielson against any of those guys. I mean, WWE did a lot right on Monday night as far as they positioned it. You had a choice of Punk, Mysterio, or Swagger to go into that match against Cena, so it would have worked against any of the guys that could have been chosen. I mean, they did everything right on Monday. It's just the fallout of this is completely baffling. And again, unless he's going to show up at the Ring of Honor pay-per-view in the six-man gauntlet and he's protected by WWE that way, and he is definitely brought back, and that's why Vince talked to him, okay, because that can at least play into the storyline, and at least it appeases the outside forces that have caused this. But for any other reason besides that, it's just completely ludicrous. And the fact that they, all these other things go on, including the vegetative state storyline that's been going on, it just is very, it's amazing. It's amazing that this is what they picked on, but it shows you how good that visual was and how good they actually pulled off Monday night.
It's almost certainly not a work. There are a lot of people that hope he's going to show up on Monday night. And, I mean, if he shows up Monday night, then I mean, they've completely lost their minds. I mean, they've obviously lost their minds as a result of what they've done here. But everybody in a position of power in WWE has been told that he has really been fired. He is talking with various indie promoters. He's probably going to be getting bookings when this 90-day no-compete is up. I mean, this is not a swerve. It is not a Brian Pillman-style angle to try to get people talking. I mean, if he'd been fired on TV, that would be one thing because everybody watching the TV would know about it. But when you've got 5 million to 5.5 million viewers, or even 4.5 million, whatever the number has been of late, when you have 4.5 million viewers watching Raw, and you announce a guy is fired on a Friday evening at 6 o'clock p.m., nobody knows. I mean, statistically, nobody knows that Daniel Bryan has been fired except the very hardcore people that go on the internet and listen to radio shows like this. And bringing him back on Monday, it serves absolutely no purpose. We've actually got to head to a break. I have more to say about this. We'll talk about it when we come back. We'll take your phone calls and emails about this as well later on. I'm sure a lot of people have a lot to say. So that's coming up. We'll be right back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, talking about the firing of Bryan Danielson from WWE, the former Daniel Bryan, after the tie-choking incident on Justin Roberts this past Monday night on Raw. And again, as I was talking about before the break, the firing was announced on a Friday night at 6 o'clock p.m., and so a very, very small percentage of the regular Raw audience is aware of the firing of Daniel Bryan. So to bring him back on Monday to, I guess, fool the very small percentage of people that know, it's going to have absolutely no positive effect on business whatsoever, but it would have a very, very, very negative effect on morale. I mean, you're not talking about fooling some other workers here. You're talking about a front office and a lot of executives that have come in from places like Disney and real places in the world, not the carny world of wrestling, but actual, real, large-scale entertainment businesses that have come into WWE, and you work those people on a firing, and you've gained nothing, and you've lost a lot of trust. So it's not an angle. It's not a work. He's really been fired. The whole thing is ridiculous. I talked to people today that told me that Vince is just out of his mind, was the term that was used. He's out of his mind, just a lot of things going on in WWE that have a lot of people scratching their heads. And I guess we find out what the follow-up is on Monday. They did shoot an angle at the Florida Championship Wrestling Show on, I believe it was Thursday night. I can't remember the exact night that it was. But Daniel Bryan was involved, by the way. And by the way, one more thing before I get into that. When I mentioned that they announced the firing on Friday night, that's kind of a key part of the story in the sense that normally when someone fails a drug test, and Daniel Bryan did not fail a drug test. I'm just using the drug test because this is why they do it. When someone like Carlito, for example, fails their drug test and they're going to be fired, WWE always announces it on Friday night because they want to be able to make a public announcement, but they want to do it at a time where it's the end of the work week, it's after business hours, it does not get as much play as it would if it were announced on a Tuesday morning. That's why they always choose Friday night to make these announcements. So the Daniel Bryan thing, the Bryan Danielson thing, it was not a drug test failure in any way. It was exactly what we're talking about. But the point is, he ended up being released, and they made the announcement on a Friday night at about 6 o'clock p.m. Pacific. So as a result, nobody knows about it. That's the key to this whole thing right here. If you were going to do an angle, if you were going to make a big deal out of this, number one, you would do it on television, or number two, you would at least announce the firing during a day where it would potentially be picked up and known by a lot of people well in advance. You would not do it on a Friday night at 6 o'clock p.m. Anyway, they did an angle at the FCW show where I guess we had Christian. It was supposed to be Christian and Heath Slater. I forget the tag team, but regardless, Bryan Danielson attacked Christian. Miz came out, ended up teaming with Christian as a babyface. It was Miz and Christian against Daniel Bryan and Heath Slater. And as the babyfaces were about to get the win, the rest of the NXT guys ran in and attacked the babyfaces. So they did follow it up on television, perhaps as a dry run for Raw on Monday night. So we shall see what the follow-up is. The follow-up is very important. There were a lot of people were interested in what went down Monday night, and the interest seems to have really tapered off over the last couple of days. But at the same time, we've seen a real big upswing in traffic on our website and a big upswing in business as well. And people are very interested in this angle. And Monday night is going to be a very, very important night in terms of the follow-up.
Yeah, and Brian, something else to add into it, too, is the fact that in all of the replays that they have done post-NXT, they have edited out the Justin Roberts getting choked with the tie
yes.
shot, too. So,
yeah.
It's, you know, Tuesday, I'm not sure if they followed it up all that great, although I guess they, you know, I'm willing to actually see what happens there. They had the pros of the new season at the very end lay out all the NXT rookies. By saying this should quell anything that if they're thinking about having some sort of rebellion, it should quell it right away. So you already have a way for, you know, to continue on with the first season of NXT guys as well. But, you know, it's, again, they have to prove that they are going to be able to pull this off. I mean, you know, every time they've tried angles like this in wrestling, and I mean, they've worked to a point with the NWO and things like that, but it's WWE, I just... They have to prove it to me that this is going to be, you know, continuously entertaining and continuously enthralling, especially without Danielson being there as a guy that was a legitimate threat.
The SmackDown show this past Friday night, there was one segment on the show where CM Punk came out and he was limping and he was holding his ribs, and he was talking about being beaten up on Raw on Monday. But really, that was the only follow-up on SmackDown. And, I mean, obviously, you want to do most of it on Raw, because SmackDown most weeks is actually doing less than 3 million viewers. And NXT, I mean, is down to 1 million viewers. But I just kind of felt like more should have been done. I mean, they did... Obviously, they knew that the angle was great, because they showed the replay on NXT, they showed the replay on SmackDown, and as noted, they did edit out the tie spot on both shows. They also edited out Bryan Danielson spitting on John Cena, and I don't think it was because they were unhappy with him for spitting on him. I think the idea was that since the guy is being fired, obviously we don't need footage of him spitting on the champion, because then people are going to want to see a match that they're not going to be able to see. So that was also edited off the show, and it was good in the sense that they replayed like the entire thing, like all 10 minutes on NXT and all 10 minutes on SmackDown. But I don't know, it's just it's really weird to see an angle where your top star is gang beaten by 8 guys. They completely destroy the ring. It's mutiny. It's complete insanity. And Raw and SmackDown then are just like, generally nothing has changed. It's just, there's something about that that was a little too far in one direction. I don't think they should have followed it up immediately. Like, all of NXT should be about this, and all of SmackDown should have been built around this, because it's, I think to a degree they are somewhat different audiences. But man, there should have been, I felt there should have been something more.
There should have at least been an interview there, because you already have essentially the dead ass show that was sitting at what, 0.7 or whatever it was. I guess it went up a little bit, and it goes up to a 1. So obviously there's interest there for people that wanted to see what was going to happen on NXT. At least you could have done interviews with guys, because I remember seeing the SmackDown taping results, and it's like, so nothing happened. Maybe they'll edit in interviews later about, you know, guys' reaction over what they saw, because there was one thing that they didn't actually bring up or mention is why nobody came out. I mean, Howard Finkel came out and got beat up. But, you know, why didn't anybody else run out? They could have, you know, at least interviewed guys or done something along those lines. To at least mention it, but yeah, that was a big surprise there, although
Or at least open up with like a very stern Vince McMahon saying that, you know, we're going to show you footage of what happened later. It's graphic footage, and I assure you that on Monday this situation will be dealt with. So you know to further tune in Monday, because the deal is going to continue. How could something like this happen and there's no response from Vincent K. McMahon? You know what I mean? Just little things like that. You don't have to build the entire show around it, but there should be some sort of official follow-up, because this is supposedly something that's never happened in WWE before. So it was too little. Like I said, I don't think that they should have built the entire show around it, but it was just too little for me.
Yeah, I just, oh, and by the way, before anybody asks to, because WWE released Daniel Bryan, that doesn't mean they're going to re-sign Bryan Danielson on Monday either.
Yes.
It is the same person, in case, before anybody asks.
Yes. We've gotten a lot of goofy emails. Dave and I were talking about this a little last night. A lot of goofy emails. It's funny because it's wrestling, and I guess... I can understand some of the emails in the sense that it is wrestling. It's a sport. It's not even a sport. It's a fake sport built upon a lie. And so I can understand people being you know, questioning the angle, looking for conspiracy theories or looking for angles and works and that sort of thing. But sometimes you just got to look at it. It's just, it makes no sense, and it's really stupid, but this is actually what happened. And that's really what the story is. And again, tomorrow night's a big night. We'll learn of the follow-up. The NXT guys have got to be programmed with top guys. A couple of them have got to beat some of the big stars. Wade Barrett has got to be put in a very strong position. You know, one would think from watching TV that Wade Barrett would end up in the Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view. It may happen. As of a couple of days ago, I was told that no changes were being planned for Fatal 4-Way, which is astounding. If you look at how they've built up that pay-per-view, they've done almost nothing. And the most talked about thing in the company is the NXT angle. So you would think that, well, this is what we should do for the pay-per-view. We should do some sort of reshuffling. But no, as of a couple of days ago, nothing was going to change at the Fatal 4-Way show, so no Wade Barrett. And I guess we'll wait and see. I don't want to jump to too many conclusions. I don't want to make too many predictions, but tomorrow will be a big day, and of course we'll talk about it next week on this program. And of course tomorrow night we'll talk about it a lot at WrestlingObserver.com as well. So if you can't wait till next week, we'll have a radio show up, WrestlingObserver.com. You can check it out tomorrow night, and we'll talk about what happened on Raw and everything but that went down. But for now, we're going to move on to the UFC 115 pay-per-view from Vancouver. We're going to talk about that when we get back from the break. Chuck Liddell, Rich Franklin, Mirko Krokop had a great week in a number of different ways. We'll talk about all that when we get back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here to talk all the news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We're going to get into UFC 115 in just a moment. But for all the news in pro wrestling and MMA, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. It's our website. We have daily news updates. We have weekly newsletters. And we have more audio than you can shake a stick at, as they say. 10 to 15 radio shows per week. In fact, some weeks even more. I think this week we'll do about 20. I know that between Tuesday and Thursday, I did 8 radio shows. We had news shows. We had interview shows. We had Johnny Fairplay on. We had Chris Hero on. We had Lance Storm on. We had Dr. Lucha on. One show after another over the last several days. We had a UFC recap directly after the show last night with Dave Meltzer. We're going to have another show tonight after the TNA pay-per-view. We'll have another show tomorrow after Raw. All of this audio is available for subscribers. It's only $10.99 per month. And in fact, if you sign up for a longer-term subscription, it can actually drop down to as low as $9.99 per month. And for $9.99, you get everything. There's no hidden fees. There's no extra price for archives. $9.99 gets you every new radio show we do, 10, 15, 20 per week. You also get our full archive dating back to 2005. It is, in fact, our five-year anniversary this week. We've got thousands and thousands of shows in the archives covering every conceivable topic. Pro wrestling, mixed martial arts. We have History of Wrestling with Carl Stern. And, of course, the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare with our buddy Mike Sempervivi here. And his co-host Adam Summers talking everything in Japan, Lucha. Actually, not a lot of Lucha, but Japan, hockey, pretty much everything under the sun. It's the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. If you have a long commute, if you travel to the gym, if you just want some audio to listen to, WrestlingObserver.com will hook you up. So check it out. And Mike, the UFC 115 pay-per-view last night, what'd you think?
I liked it a lot. I know on paper a lot of people kind of maligned it a little bit, but I was looking forward to it, and I was actually hoping some of these fights would actually be on the 114 show just because of the amount of knockout possibilities that could take place. And obviously in the main event, Rich Franklin and Chuck Liddell. Chuck Liddell, we were told, you know, 9 months of clean living. He hadn't had a drop of alcohol or hasn't been partying, and he had taken this fight more seriously than he's taken anything. And Dana, who basically retired him after his last fight, brought him back to be one of the coaches, and he looked pretty good except for one thing. Chuck Liddell throws wide and got caught with a right hand very, very late in the round. It's 5 seconds left to go in the round, in the first round, and Rich Franklin, his first fight up there at 205, knocks out Chuck Liddell, and it seems like he's going to send Liddell back into retirement.
It was a very sad night for Chuck Liddell. I mean, he looked great. He looked awesome in the weigh-ins. He looked really good in the fight. And he was, in fact, he looked so good that he threw this kick early in the fight and broke Rich Franklin's arm. Rich Franklin blocked a kick, arm got broken, kept fighting, and Chuck Liddell was en route to winning the round. And perhaps, I can't say for sure because guys have fought with broken arms before, but perhaps the doctor would have noticed the broken arm of Rich Franklin and waved off the fight, and Chuck Liddell would have ended last night's UFC show a winner and the recipient of most likely a fight versus Forrest Griffin. But instead, with seconds left in the round, he was hit by that right hand. He was knocked out. This looks to be the end of the career of Chuck Liddell, and I was sad for the guy. I mean, He really wanted this. He really tried hard. He really looked good, and he got caught with seconds left. And what can you say? It was too bad, but that's the fight game.
Yeah, really, and it's just the tough part is it's
people go, well, yeah, he was competitive and he maybe deserves another, you know, another shot, but it's the fact that he's getting knocked out so much. And, you know, this is his fourth loss in five fights. And, you know, it's, again, Dana White said at the press conference, he said it before Liddell even came back when he basically retired him the first time around after he was knocked out by Mauricio Hua. What else do you have to prove? And realistically, what else does Chuck Liddell have to prove? I mean, to see him slip into becoming a gatekeeper is just unfathomable to everyone involved, and he certainly won't be doing it in UFC. And he's one of those guys, as, you know, Dana White talked about at the press conference, that's been with him the whole time. I mean, it's amazing to think about. Chuck Liddell's first fight in the UFC was in 1998. UFC 17 in 1998, and he's been with him the whole time. You know, Dana said he's going to continue to always be a part of the UFC family. So I think, you know, Liddell with movie options and other options out there. I mean, I do hope that he does appreciate, and everybody should appreciate his performance tonight. But realistically, with the amount of knockouts that have been piling up, I mean, you know, the five losses he does have, most recently four of them have been by knockout and a couple of them very brutally. So, and this one was, again, no exception there, as he got caught with that right hand. And it was amazing, too, with Rich Franklin. He did earn $85,000 for that knockout bonus, but you would have never known until they said it afterwards that his left arm was broken. I mean, it wasn't like a situation where Frank Mir snapped Tim Sylvia's arm. You saw the pops. It just blocked the Liddell kick. And you can see in the replay, you know, if you watch it again, you can see him kind of throwing with his left hand with it open. But the thing is, he was still throwing with that left arm. But, yeah, if a doctor would have been able to see that in the corner, and likely they would have, we would be talking about a completely different situation here.
Have you ever broken your arm?
I have never broken my arm, thank God.
I broke my arm.
Arm, no.
Broke my arm when I was in seventh grade. It's the only bone I've broken besides, like, toes. But it's funny because I was watching Rich Franklin after this fight, and he's holding his arm like it's been severed with an axe. Like he's just it's all bent and weird, and he's pointing it out, and he's like, look at this giant bump right here, and this and that. But I mean, he doesn't look like he's in immense pain. He's just very calmly saying this arm is broken here. And at first I was like, God, this guy like got the pain tolerance of a machine or what is this here? And then someone else pointed out, remember when Tim Sylvia broke his arm and he wanted to keep fighting? And then I remembered that when I broke my arm, I fell on it and I remember it hurt. And I was like, God, that hurt my arm. But then I got in the car and I went home and I did some homework and I went to eat dinner with my family. And it was not until about 2.5 hours later that my dad looked at my arm and said, your arm looks really weird. And I looked down, and sure enough, it was bent at a funny angle. And I went to the doctor, and my arm was broken. And they broke it back, and believe me, when they broke it back, that hurt a hell of a lot more than when it broke in the first place. But it's kind of a funny thing with broken arms. You hear about a man having a broken arm, and you think, man, this guy must be in immense pain. And really, it just, you know, it hurts when it breaks. And then sometimes you just, you know, I'm sure Rich Franklin would have been fine fighting for another three rounds if he had to. I don't know if the doctor would have let him. But, I mean, Frank Shamrock broke his arm in a fight, I think, in the first round and ended up fighting four rounds before the whole thing ended. So, you know, it's kind of a funny thing sometimes. Don't know what that really had to do with anything. But I was thinking about that when I saw Rich with his broken arm. We had Mirko Krokop beat Pat Barry. And Pat Barry idolized Mirko Krokop. He was just looked up to him as this legendary great fighter. They became good friends. They went out there tonight. Pat Barry had a real good first round in the sense that he knocked Mirko Krokop on his ass and then let him get up. And then he knocked him on his ass again and let him get up a second time. And by the second time, everybody that was watching with me in the house was like, I can't wait to see this Pat Barry get knocked out. They were begging for it at that point. And they ended up going into the second round. Krokop took over. He actually ended up on the ground with Pat Barry. He got the mount. He got his back. And in the third round, it was more of the same. And Mirko Krokop beat Pat Barry via rear naked choke submission. The place went haywire. Mirko Krokop looked really good, actually. He looked in shape. He showed various parts of his game. I don't know where he goes from here. He was funny on the mic. He told Dana not to be stingy and give him the best submission bonus, which he got. And it was a great night for Mirko Krokop.
Yeah, it really was. But turning back the hands of time, you know, a little bit there. I mean, in the first round, I just kept thinking, oh, God, it's going to be like a Congo fighter or something like that because, I mean, Barry was really hurting Krokop bad. I mean, he swole up his eye, something fierce, and did some real damage to Mirko's left upper cheek. But as the fight continued to go on, you could see the experience level. And, I mean, you know, Krokop's kind of, you know, it's not like he was finished by Fed or in Pride and you know, it went through Nogueira. So, I mean, that was, to see him actually be able to turn back the hands of time a little bit and not leave himself open and get caught too much. And he did end up looking really, really good. And, again, you know, like you said, I don't know where you can go with him from here because realistically, you stick Krokop in there with Lesnar or Mir or any of those guys. I mean, Carwin, Dos Santos, I think he's already lost to Dos Santos. He's not going to be able to compete, I don't think. But as long as he continues to want to fight and his head's into it, there is a space for him to at least put on exciting fights. And again, against top-tier guys, no. But against guys like Tat Barry and other guys that, you know, I don't think him and Gilbert Ivel would be all that great. But, I mean, in fights like that where, you know, they're there to create excitement, if Prokop's willing to do that, I think they could be beneficial to both sides as long as his price tag's not too high.
You know what? I'd do Krokop and Mir. Who cares?
Well, you know, what really harm could come from it? If Mir wins, great. You know, people can expect that. And if Krokop wins, well, then you do have a reason to put him in there with Lesnar.
We had Martin Kampman and Paulo Thiago. There were actually two fights in a row that I wasn't enamored by. Kampman, He went in there with Thiago. He was better standing. Thiago, they ended up on the ground, and Thiago, as opposed to having the advantage, which you'd think is a black belt, he actually was outworked by Martin Kampman on the ground, and Kampman won a three-round decision. He announced afterwards he tried to use a lot of moves on Paulo Thiago, and they did not work, he said, which is a perfect description of this fight. He tried to put him in a lot of moves and could not tap him.
That's true, although it was amazing to see. I was surprised in the way he was able to be so aggressive and be so controlling of Thiago on the ground. That was a real, real big surprise for me. But, you know, if it wasn't for that loss against Paul Daly, Martin Kampman would be up the ranks in the welterweight division a little bit more. But, you know, it was impressive from the way he was able to really really stifled Thiago, but yeah, as you said, it wasn't exactly the most exciting fight in the world. It wasn't Fitch level, but it wasn't the most exciting fight in the world.
No, he really outclassed him. I mean, Thiago had no answer to anything that he did. And, that's a real testament to Martin Kampman, but I was more annoyed with Thiago in the sense that I realized that he was being outclassed, but in the first fight, you had a guy that was down two rounds probably on most scorecards, and he knew it. And he came out in that third round and destroyed the guy. And we had a fight here with Thiago where he was down two rounds, and he went out there and did the exact same thing he did in the first two rounds when he got beaten. And so, I don't know. I was not
blown away. Well, maybe he was trying to take the Russo approach, which was, you know, do the exact same thing you were doing in the first two rounds, and maybe just the guy will walk into your fist.
Maybe something will change, yes. We had Ben Rothwell and Gilbert Ivel. They had a slobber knocker in the first round, and then the match pretty much fell off the cliff, especially round three. Ivel on the ground just absolutely sucks. Rothwell dominated the positioning but had no stamina. He had no power. He just laid on the guy and hit him a lot, and just a boring fight. Ivel looked horrible. Rothwell looked horrible. Rothwell was really unhappy about his performance. He won the three-round decision. We'll talk more about this and the opener when we come back from break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We were running down the UFC show. Do you have any comments on Ben Rothwell versus Gilbert Ivel, or should we just move on?
I was always surprised in the fact that they wanted Ben Rothwell to go right into the UFC, yet they wanted Roy Nelson to go on The Ultimate Fighter. And I know Rothwell beat Nelson in the IFL and was on a really hot winning streak. With that said, Rothwell, you know, called his performance unacceptable and didn't think Dana White would be happy, and I think he was right. I mean, it wasn't a good performance at all, although, I mean, I don't know if a fun piece of crap would be too rude of a way to say it, but at least it was a slobber knocker of a fight, even though you knew damn well if it was going to go to the third round, it was going to be, you know, really drag down the fun of the first round. But it was two guys that were just, it was two dudes just fighting.
And then the opener, Carlos Condit and Rory McDonald. This was a really fun fight. Rory was from Kelowna, which is near BC. And or near Vancouver, I'm sorry. I think it may actually very well be in British Columbia, but regardless, I don't live in Canada, so it is. Pardon me, everyone. But regardless, he was the hometown boy, because any Canadian is a hometown boy in Canada, and faced Carlos Condit, and he won the first round on my scorecard, 10-9. I gave him the second round 10-9 as well. I know a couple of judges gave it to Condit, but I had two rounds for Rory. And the second round, mind you, included a double big boot spot. And then in the third round, Carlos Condit came out and beat the living hell out of Rory McDonald. He made the comeback of a lifetime and beat him with seconds left in the round, which ended up being very controversial because the Canadians in attendance felt that if the referee had let it go, that Rory McDonald would have won the decision, and that the referee stopped it specifically so that the wrong man did not win this fight, in the judge's opinion. We're going to talk about that controversy. We'll get Mike's thoughts and more coming up after the break, and we've got another hour of pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live, here for the second hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We were talking about the UFC 115 pay-per-view in the last hour. Chuck Liddell knocked out in the last 5 seconds by Rich Franklin in a round that he was winning after having broken Rich Franklin's arm with a kick. We were talking about the opener of the show, Carlos Condit making a big comeback, beating Rory McDonald, and the referee's controversial stoppage in that round. My personal thought was that two rounds for McDonald. I thought that Condit was on the way to getting a 10-8 round, which would have made the fight a draw. But realistically, UFC refs don't give a lot of 10-8s. And so most likely, Rory McDonald would have won a fight where he got destroyed in round three had the referee not stopped it with 7 seconds left. And Mike, your thoughts on that fight and the finish?
You know, it's completely possible that he would win it, although it really should have been a draw because just the domination that was taking place in the third round. And, yeah, I mean, there were 7 seconds left to go, but, you know, hey, McDonald, it's not like he really, you know, protested the decision or anything. I mean, his left eye looked like he was fractured and his right eye was bleeding. So, I mean, he was getting just plowed on the ground. And yeah, I mean, look, Rory McDonald, no matter the fact that he lost this and this was his first loss, it doesn't matter. He still comes out of this a bigger star than that, you know, because of how he fought than when he went in. So there's nothing to complain about when it comes to Rory McDonald. And, you know, when you say that if you're a Canadian, you're going to be obviously cheered in Canada after the preliminaries where Yves Levine called a fight off way too early, the Mac Danzig, Matt Wyman bout. He was the only Canadian that was getting booed all night.
Did you see that the bonuses on the show were $85,000?
Were they all 85 or just Tanaka? I guess they all were $85,000.
Astounding.
Yeah. It's amazing when you look at the numbers when Dana White and when everybody took over the UFC and the salaries that were getting paid, and people really ripped the UFC for how much they would pay their fighters because they would always compare it to boxing. But realistically, they've been able to pay everything back quite nicely between pay-per-view bonuses and the fight-of-the-night bonuses like this.
It's just shocking that, like, the last show, which is going to do close to a million buys, the bonuses were 65,000. And this show, which is going to be lucky to break 500,000, had bonuses of $85,000. So it was a great night to be working this show in Vancouver, because if you got any of the bonuses this evening, Fight of the Night, Knockout, or Submission of the Night, you're $85,000 richer. We're going to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. We'll start taking some email questions and more. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, taking all your phone calls, emails, questions on various subjects. Going to talk about more news here in a bit, but let's jump into the email mailbag. We've actually cannot believe the number of questions that we've gotten. Like, got a lot of them here. Let's get into it here. If Krokop re-signing comes with a high price tag, does it make sense to re-sign him? It seems like if they match him up with Lesnar, Carwin Jr., or Cain Velasquez, I get yelled at every time. He's just going to get creamed. Would a match with Mir make sense? Actually, I just argued the match with Mir. For a big price tag, no. I think for an average price tag, I think he's still valuable to a degree, especially after last night, but... You know, I don't know what you mean by big price tag. I mean, if he wants $500,000 a fight or something like that, I would not sign him to it. But, you know,
and
if he's...
You know what I would do, though, if I'm UFC, which is something out of their norm, would be, you know, fight-to-fight contracts. I mean, we've seen him pick up and go to Dream. We saw that the last time around. I mean, realistically, there's not much he can really do to hurt you. Because, you know, depending on what fight you put him in next. So, I mean, to have a one-fight deal with maybe another option from the UFC or something like that instead of the standard three, I don't think it would be all that bad of an idea.
We've got this person here says, wrestlers that work for indies that Danielson has frequented in the past are going to be scared away from WWE due to all the corporate politics. They're not going to be interested in working there. If WWE still wants the Briscoes, you think they'll take a WWE offer after this ridiculous fiasco? Actually, I do.
Yeah.
Listen, Danielson getting fired is lame, okay? But Bryan Danielson, for the last year, has made an awful lot of money in WWE. An awful lot of money. He's also appeared on WWE television. He just laid out the WWE champion. His value on the indie scene has just skyrocketed as a result of being in WWE. So don't think for a second that this is scaring off anybody from WWE, because it's not. They all realize it sucks, don't get me wrong, but this is not going to have someone go, should I take this deal that's going to pay me six figures a year, or should I continue working for a few hundred bucks per shot on the indies? They're going to take the deal to go to WWE. And he also says Danielson won't come back if this blows over and WWE comes calling. First off, he may end up in TNA after 90 days. He's not the type who will want to sit around waiting for a call and then jump back in when they want him. He has an FU mindset for anybody if he feels they have screwed him over, and when it comes to corporate politics. All right. This is not Daniel Bryan that has written this, or Bryan Danielson. So I would guess that when WWE when WWE comes calling and they've got a new deal for him and they're perhaps going to play off of this, I would guess that he's probably going to go back. So that would be my thought. Do you have anything to add to that?
Not really. I mean, it's not like Loki threw down, you know, Lay Cool's shirts and said, I'm out of here, and decided to go join him or something like that. I mean, it's still a lot of money.
Somebody here is, he's actually making a joke about, is The Undertaker really dead? Noting that this is, people have been asking about this. You know, I have a, my grandmother has a friend who watches a lot of wrestling, and she was very concerned about The Undertaker deal. So, you know, it is 2010, but they're, are apparently a lot of people that are so into WWE programming that they were really concerned about the health and safety of The Undertaker. He is really hurt, everyone. I will say that. He suffered a broken orbital bone, a broken nose, and a concussion when Ray did a sit-down splash and landed right on his face. And he's out of the Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view. He's probably out until SummerSlam. He is not dead. He's going to be okay, but...
Now, wait. Now, did that friend of Granny's actually... Now, did she say she was worried about The Undertaker because he was in a vegetative state? Did she ask about how Justin Roberts was doing?
She did not ask about Justin Roberts. May not have watched Raw, actually. This person says, TNA has a pay-per-view this weekend. I think, actually, I'd forgotten. I literally had forgotten until just now, but we'll talk about that after a while. I think the card itself is actually not a bad card by any means. Isn't it funny that Russo is complaining about being burnt out as the viewership is sinking? Yes, what a coincidence. I'll bet that is his excuse. In fact, forget the HD or the 3D. If Russo is leaving the company and getting a group of monkeys to write the show, perhaps that's the announcement. It would be a game changer for sure. Well, the big announcement at Slammiversary is supposedly not a change on the writing team. We're going to get into Slammiversary a little later. I want to do more of these questions here. More people talking about how ridiculous it is that Daniel Bryan was fired for choking out the announcer. Would Triple H have been fired for doing that? Well, Triple H wouldn't have done that because he is aware of the rule not to choke. Shouldn't the cameraman or the TV director be fired? Yes. But that didn't happen. So
that's, if this was the real world, the person that would be fired in all likelihood would be the director and maybe the cameraman who should have panned away or something like that. But no, that it ends up falling only in professional wrestling.
He says,
like, not only in professional wrestling, there's scapegoats everywhere, but just only in wrestling did you get a story like this.
Yeah, exactly. He says, I have to believe there's more to the story. There really is not. I mean, there's more to the story in the sense that there was pressure put on them by an outside force of some sort, that this was not a PG-friendly deal, and he broke a rule they've had for several years, whether knowingly or not. But, I mean, it's just... If you really follow wrestling, stuff that makes no sense happens all the time. It just does. You know, I'll just give you an example. Mickie James fired because she wanted to do outside projects, including doing a country music deal and getting a record. Now, if you were running a wrestling company, Mike, and you had a Mickie James who had a chance to do an album, and who knows, maybe it's going to be great and she's going to make the country music charts and actually become somewhat of a star outside of wrestling. Would you not want your wrestlers to be seen as stars in the mainstream?
Yeah, you would figure you would.
Well, they don't.
Yes.
They see you doing an outside project as, oh, really? Oh, so you want to do an outside project? You're not happy with your job here?
We have a music label. You know, jump on board and have Jim Johnson produce it.
Yeah. What do you think? You're above us. You're trying to get leverage to get a better deal. Resigning. That's what they think here. Okay. These things don't make any sense to normal people, and it happens all the time. And the Daniel Bryan thing is just another one. More, but Daniel Bryan. Let's say the firing is actually legit, which it is. Do you think the WWE is hoping for this angry reaction to spread? No, that was not their intent going into this. It has nothing to do with the internet crowd. He's written a lot more here, but in general, no. This has nothing to do with getting the internet fans riled up or anything like that. It's what happened. He was the scapegoat, and it happened to be Daniel Bryan. If Heath Slater would have choked a guy out with a tie, he'd be gone as well, and the internet wouldn't have cared at all. So that's just what happened. Bryan, I watched UFC 115 at the local theater. Crowd was a little less than half full. Not sure how many tickets a theater has to sell to turn a profit on these things. I was wondering what effect you think the summer blockbuster season might have on the promotion as the live UFC shows find itself competing against Karate Kid, A-Team, etc. Was there any talk of showing WWE or TNA pay-per-views in theaters? No. TNA, I presume, could announce that they're going to do a theater deal. I don't think anybody would go. But they could be trying to follow in the footsteps of UFC. A half-full theater is actually pretty damn good. To be honest with you, I know that there were a place in San Jose Dave talked about that nobody showed up at for the UFC 115 show. You know, a half full theater is turning a profit, believe me. And on the subject of the A-Team was in fact beaten this weekend by the Karate Kid. So it sucks to be Quentin Jackson. And actually, apparently, the Karate Kid did like $56 million or something like that, which was like double their projections. They were gobsmacked at how well that movie did. And I don't know why, but there you go. Batista going to TNA, is it possible? Obviously, that is not announcement, but could it be coming? Batista was making $3 million a year in WWE, and he's not going to be given $3 million a year in TNA, and so I don't see him going there. I would say the chances of Batista to TNA are about 1%, maybe even less. But especially now since they're on a hiring freeze. I shouldn't say hiring freeze. They're doing much less hiring. And when you're doing a lot less hiring, you're certainly not hiring a guy that's going to want $3 million a year. So, no, do not expect Batista to head to WWE anytime soon. We're going to head to a break. Be back in just a moment. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 45 minutes, taking your phone calls and emails. Got a caller here on the line. You're on Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Johnny Sutter from Colorado.
Johnny, what's happening?
Yeah, if this has already been asked, just coming off, but as far as the whole outside interest having a big problem with someone, there was these other thing you guys were hinting at that you didn't reveal, and obviously you must have your reasons for that, but you said it was mind-bogglingly stupid. Is there any truth that it has anything to do with The Undertaker?
It does not have anything to do with The Undertaker, no.
Okay.
I would expect, actually, probably in the next couple of days, we'll be talking about it a little more. He just didn't want to mention it yesterday, but it's one of those mini deals where once you hear it, it probably will not surprise you all that much because they do it all the time, but it's WWE getting very, very irrationally upset about something that they really shouldn't get upset about. I'll just say this. The thing in question, the person didn't do anything wrong, but WWE got very upset. So this is not a deal where, like, you know, somebody's failing a drug test and WWE's covering it up. It's nothing like that. It's something where somebody didn't do anything wrong, but WWE, as they often do, got really, really mad, and it just absolutely makes no sense. So,
the funniest little internet rumor going around is that the outside corporate so-and-so doesn't want Undertaker to be dead. Or they're mad that CM Punk now wears a mask because it doesn't match his doll.
Not a bad one. It's not a bad one, but I'm afraid neither of them are true.
Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks very much for the call. We can do a lot of comedy about this, actually, but none of those are true. So let's look at the TNA Slammiversary pay-per-view. It is tonight. Let's plug it. It's coming on immediately after this show here. And if you want full running live play-by-play, go to WrestlingObserver.com. Dave's going to be doing it. It's for free. Just head to Observer.com, click on the ongoing live TNA play-by-play discussion. We'll give you all the results of all the matches. Let's look at them here. The main event, Sting and Rob Van Dam for the title. I don't know. It's a match. Rob Van Dam beat Sting on his first night in 2 minutes. Somehow that led to Sting being ranked number one. I don't know how. They brawled for about 30 minutes at the end of the last Impact. And after all that brawl, I never wanted to see them face each other again, but they're facing each other on the pay-per-view. And I don't see it being a great match. Maybe it'll be all right. Kind of seems like a style clash. Sting works easy at his age. RVD likes to work hard and do wacky stuff. And Mike, what are your thoughts on that particular match?
I can just see somebody running in at the end of it or something like that. But I wouldn't see a reason to take the belt off Rob Van Dam, although I know they've been playing up the old Sting, and he stole the belt and wrote Deception on it and promises these winds of change to be coming or something along those lines. But I still see RVD holding on to the belt, although I can see this not ending with somebody coming in at the end because it's TNA, and what else could possibly happen?
We've actually got another caller here on the line, so let's take this call. You're on Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, how you doing, brother? It's Jay from Brooklyn.
What's up, Jay?
Hey, not a lot. Just a quick comment about the UFC show. I mean, I just got back, actually, from a long night. But, overall, I enjoyed the show. And, I mean, it was probably one of the more enjoyable shows overall that I've been to in a while. That's a comment. But the question kind of random. Beware of Dog 1996, the In Your House pay-per-view, ended by, or I guess interrupted by lightning and big thunderstorm. But any if Brian has any backstory or any backstage information about that pay-per-view, I'd be interested to know about it. So.
In what sense?
I mean, I guess I'm not really sure actually. Anything as far as because I know they had to redo most of the pay-per-view a few days later in Charleston, but you know, any I guess anything that was changed because the pay-per-view was you know, held up or anything like that.
I just recall, you know, what's funny is like I never saw that pay-per-view for some reason. It was like
sorry to interrupt. I mean, I was younger, but I was actually live at the pay-per-view itself when the power went out. So like that's why I was calling and see if there was anything.
And they still did the main event, right?
They still did the main event. That's when the power came back on with Sean and Bulldog. Yeah, but I remember seeing like, I guess the Undertaker Goldust casket match in the dark, and like Yokozuna versus maybe like Bradshaw or something. Like a lot of matches just like in the dark.
Yeah, the only thing I remember off the top of my head is like Shawn Michaels was really, really mad. I remember that this was like its period where he just freak out about everything, and he got so angry that night. And I never even saw that. I don't even know why it was. I've seen like almost every single WWE pay-per-view, but for whatever reason, I didn't see that show. And I just remember it was like, man, the one show I miss, everything goes wrong, and Mother Nature strikes, and it's all this stuff. But I just remember Sean was really, really upset about it. And Mike, do you remember anything from that show?
Well, that was the one where Savio Vega snapped Steve Austin's winning streak in the Caribbean Strap match. And I think it was Mark Merrow had taken Hunter or Sable from Triple H around that time, too. But that was about it. I don't remember there being anything wacky or unusual about anything that was done. They just redid some stuff a couple days later, and that was it.
Yeah, just had to, a lot of trying to figure out backstage what the hell to even do when something like this happens, and then Michaels being mad. But that's pretty much all I remember from that period.
Okay, yeah, not a problem. Just had a curiosity about that.
Sure. Maybe we'll ask Dave tomorrow and see if he's got any more. So I'll try to remember to ask that one on the show.
The only thing I remember briefly about it is you know, the free-for-all and like Sonny with switching to the Godwins or something with that.
Yeah. I'll ask him tomorrow. I'll see if we can get anything out of him.
Okay, yeah. Thanks a lot, man.
All right, thanks very much for the call. Let's go back to the TNA pay-per-view here, the X Division title match. We had Kendrick versus Doug Williams, actually listed as the semi-main event on this show, if you can believe that. And I like Douglas Williams. I think his promos are great. I love his gimmick of being the wrestler who doesn't like all these dudes doing flips. And I think that'll actually probably be a pretty good match. I hope they don't switch the title yet, but you never know. But that's the battle.
I don't see how they could, although I know they do like Kendrick. I mean, I think he's lost a bunch of matches, if I'm not mistaken, leading into this. But had a promo this week on TV calling his mother a genius and his father a paranoid schizophrenic, and he falls somewhere in the middle. And regardless of any of that, I hope Doug Williams kills him, not because of anything against Brian Kendrick, just because that's the one thing TNA has actually gotten right has been Doug Williams throughout this whole thing, because he has been far more entertaining by just being wrestling guy Doug Williams than a lot of what the X Division usually has in it.
Roxy against Madison Rayne for the Knockouts title. I don't know if I was asleep. I don't know if they just didn't show anything on this past show, but I have no memory of this match being signed.
No, you'd have to. You blocked it out of your memory because the whole Rosie Lotta Love thing and all of that stuff. So,
from 2 weeks ago?
Is Roxy even under a TNA contract, by the way?
Is what?
Is Roxy even under a TNA contract? I guess she is. But
I don't actually know, to be honest with you. I don't know if she's re-signed.
Because I don't think she's winning anyway. Madison Rayne has done I'm not going to say a great job, but she's done a really, really good job trying to hold down a division that's, you know, to put it mildly, a shell of what it was. And at least she's been able to be a steadying force in the thing. Well, I don't know about force, but she's been good, okay? And so I'm sure the match with Roxy is going to be decent enough. It'll probably be short, and it's probably going to set up Madison and Rosie Lotta Love.
AJ Styles versus Jay Lethal, which actually should be a pretty darn good match. So I don't know what I don't really even know what it's all about. I guess it's fake Ric Flair versus Ric Flair's protege or something like that. I know that AJ pinned Lethal on the show this past Thursday night. It's going to be good, but it's like one of those matches that it's almost like this looks like a TV lineup almost, and it's on pay-per-view.
Yeah, and it's, you know, you figure, okay, this is when Styles and Kazarian and Lethal had that three-way and Lethal pinned Styles, so this is, I guess, the tiebreaker in there, and I don't know. I mean, I'm going to assume Styles is going to win the match, probably with Flair's interference or something like that, just because I can't see Kurt Angle losing to Kazarian, so I'm sure they're going to continue to play up AJ and Kazarian against each other, one would assume at least, so that's the result I pretty much figure for those two matches.
Mr. Anderson, who they spelled his name wrong on the TNA website, they spelled it Mr. Anderon. He is going to team with, I swear to God, he's going to team with Jeff Hardy against Beer Money. And aside from the RVD match, Jeff Hardy in TNA is not the same worker he is in WWE. And Mr. Anderson is always kind of a little bit clunky. Beer Money's awesome, so hopefully this match will be pretty good. I don't know if I see this being a great match, but hopefully it's pretty good. Any thoughts
on
that one?
For me, I mean, it's going to be the best thing on the show, I would assume. I mean, Angle Kazarian ought to be good, but realistically, yeah. I think this should be the best match of the night.
Anderson or Angle and Kazarian, I think it's going to be pretty good. I'm a lot of people like Kazarian more than I do in terms of his work. I think that he's I don't want to call him a spot monkey. I kind of hate that term, but that was like the first term that popped into my mind. Does a lot of moves, and he's not really like a great worker. He's good, but you know, Kurt Angle can have a great match with a guy who's just good. So I think that.
Well, and you know what? Maybe we're getting to see that obviously with Kazarian playing up with Flair a little bit. I mean, it's not like Kazarian can go a little bit. The same. It's like the same thing with the machine guns. If they don't have to be X Division, well, spot monkeys, you know, guys like that can still go. It's like Christopher Daniels the same way. I mean, he didn't have to kill himself with all of those moves, but that's one of the things they wanted. But that's why the match with Angle is going to help him immensely, and it should be pretty good because he'll actually be able to show off the fact he doesn't have to do all those things.
We've got Matt Morgan against Hernandez. So apparently it was supposed to be a tag match. And it's not now. I could have sworn Hogan said this is your tag partner on Sunday on the Impact show this past Thursday night. But they're just going to have a singles match. It's may be all right. I don't know. I don't have high hopes for this
whole,
one.
And this is another one where you have to chuck your brain because of the stupidity.
Actually, Mike, hold on one sec. We're right up against a break. So I'll let you talk about this when we come back. And we'll run down the rest of the card as well. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, talking about the TNA Slammiversary show tomorrow. We were talking about the Hernandez-Matt Morgan match, and Mike, floor is yours.
You know, Homicide this week on TNA pulled out a screwdriver and a hammer and was trying to use both of those on Kendrick. Thank God nobody was watching that. You remember when Hernandez first got hurt? He was actually going to Mexico, but he got all busted up and they had Homicide run down, and it looked like vicious, tragic, awful injuries for Hernandez. And you had to figure that, man, they're going to make a big deal out of this when he comes back. And last week, you see Morgan looking up into the crowd, seeing something that apparently nobody else is seeing, except for the two people that were apparently standing in front of Hernandez last week, when we were supposed to figure out that it was probably him, and then Hogan announcing him. I don't know. I guess they've completely forgotten about why he was gone in the first place, but hopefully they come up with some sort of video package that they could play because they could have really used it on the go-home show this past Thursday night. I mean, watch Ring of Honor show if you have HDNet tomorrow leading into their June 19th Go Fight Live pay-per-view and compare it to the go-home show really for a lot of WWE, but especially for TNA this past week. And it will just blow your mind in the difference in trying to make you buy something. So I would figure Hernandez wins. He beats Morgan. He beats Morgan's, ego, I guess, is his other tag team partner. And I figure they'll go somewhere after that. Who knows where they go with both of those guys after that. But I would figure Hernandez gets the win.
Then we've got the Monsters Ball, Desmond Wolfe and Abyss. Why is it Monsters Ball? I have no idea. Chelsea is going to
be... You know why it's Monsters Ball? Because this is the first year they don't have the... what was the goofy Jeff Jarrett match?
The King of the Mountain.
Anniversary.
Yeah. Hated that match. Yeah, Chelsea... I mean, this is one of those things that just disappointed me about Impact. And God knows, that should tell you something. The Chelsea storyline, Abyss won a match last month and got Chelsea for 30 days. Now, if you don't, if you've watched any wrestling in your life, okay, this has been done before. Guy wins girl for 30 days, or guy has to be another dude's slave for 30 days. You just imagine the 30-day stips that they've had. Always an awesome series of vignettes, an awesome series of video packages. I don't think they did a single one with this. Just for 30 days, Chelsea came down to the ring with Abyss, and that was it. I mean, this is just like, how do you mess that one up? You know what I mean? I mean, it's a lot of stips they've messed up, and there's a lot of stuff they've dropped the ball on, but how do you mess that one up? Abyss, the monster Abyss, wins Desmond Wolfe's girl for 30 days, and they do nothing with it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's... I mean, it's like reading about WWE, the NXT thing. They're thinking outside the box. No, they're doing wrestling angles. And it was the same thing when it comes to, first of all, I mean, Kazarian and AJ are bitching at each other about who actually belongs in Flair's group. And realistically, if the person who should be getting kicked out is Desmond Wolfe, because he's the one who keeps losing things. You stab the guy with a bottle, for Christ's sakes, and, you know, you continue to lose things. And with Chelsea is at least very pretty. But, you know, the same things in wrestling can always work. As dumb as it sounds, you've made Abyss kind of goofy anyway. David Von Erich, when he won Jimmy Garvin and Precious, they had her washing the dog and doing all that stuff. I think it happened with Missy Hyatt and Jack Victory, too, in World Class or in Mid-South. Those goofy things are really timeless in professional wrestling, and it's something that, yes, it's goofy, but you can actually pull it off and it would still work. And have wackiness like that, and again, why they blew the chance to do it, who knows?
I still can't get over they spelled Mr. Anderson wrong.
Well, they're hyping Slammiversary 8 when there's only been 6 of them. Just call it Slammiversary, the 8th anniversary of TNA. Why call it Slammiversary 8?
That's just what they do. We finally have Brother Ray versus Jesse Neal. I actually didn't know this was taking place either. I knew they were feuding with each other, but I thought it would be like a tag match. No, it's one-on-one. Brother Ray versus Jesse Neal. And I love this angle. I will say that. I think Brother Ray is awesome as like the old, angry, grizzled wrestler who hates the young upstart. I think Jesse Neal is awesome as the young upstart. I think D-Von is awesome as the other veteran who's not as grizzled and not as crabby, and he's actually mad at the other veteran for being so mean to the young upstart. I just think everyone is playing their roles perfectly, and I hope Bubba puts him over tomorrow because that would be the right finish on this show.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely. And, yeah, I know Dave has really been a fan of Jesse Neal, and I'm starting to see it, you know, a little bit more and more. And, you know, Shannon Moore is been good in his spot, I guess, just with his look, and that's it. But yeah, I mean, Bubba Ray is a great prick, or pulls off playing a great prick, at least. And again, they had all of this interaction on Thursday, but just like you, I didn't even really know that they had added this match. I just thought it was something that was going to continue to keep going.
I never knew this before. If you go to TNAWrestling.com, and you scroll down to latest TNA news, at the top it says right here, Monster's blog, column by Abyss. Did you know this, Mike?
No, I didn't, actually.
Let me read some of this. Speaking of Slammiversary, I'm looking forward to my match this Sunday against the rowdy Englishman known as Desmond Wolfe. I can't think of a more fitting match at a more fitting pay-per-view than Slammiversary at which to dish out some pain and suffering to a man who's done nothing but try to maim and hurt me over the past several weeks. Desmond's motivation has been to collect this Hall of Fame ring that Hulk Hogan gave to me. Did you remember that angle, by the way?
Yes, and
they did not do
guess,
a thing about that
yeah,
on the pay-per-view.
That's right. That's right, because the man really wanted it.
Yeah. I watched Impact Thursday. I saw no mention of the Hall of Fame ring.
Well, I mean, why would you? Why not have a video package of all of that stuff, including stabbing him with the bottle?
That's right, the big cut open on the bottle. So anyway, Abyss has like a 30,000-word blog here, And as you scroll down, you get to, speaking of deserving better, the Gulf oil disaster entered its 50th day this past week. It now has surpassed the Exxon Valdez disaster and is over three times the spill that Valdez was. That is amazing. So he's now doing math. I'm amazed
that people continue with Abyss.
I can't even read this whole thing. Everybody go to TNAWrestling.com. You can read Abyss's blog, everyone. The Monster Abyss has a blog at TNAWrestling.com.
And you know what? Why not hype that up, you know, on the show? And then, two, again, there's your golden chance where he could be raving one minute, you know, sitting next to Chelsea, and then breaking into some sort of, you know, political theater, or, I don't know, questioning Kane's beliefs or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. This person wants to know who wins in a submission match, Frank Gotch or Helio Gracie?
Danny Hodge.
I'm trying to think of how to answer this question. Well, Frank Gotch would have died when Helio Gracie was actually very young. So I would put my money on Frank Gotch. It's one of those things you just can't answer the question. You know what I mean? They both had, you know, Frank Gotch did American style submission wrestling, which, you know, it had a lot of what we currently call jiu-jitsu. There were a lot of those holds in the stuff that Frank Gotch did. And obviously, Helio Gracie created, and again, it's hard to say creative because he took a form of hand-to-hand combat and made some changes and called it his own. He did not invent it from scratch. But, you know, what they both did came from the same root. And so, you know, I guess I would put my money on Frank Gotch just because, you know, he would have been bigger and he would have been stronger. And I'm saying that as someone who trains in Gracie Jiu-Jitsu. So hopefully my instructor doesn't hear me say that, or he's going to get very, very angry. But one of those questions you just can't answer. Who knows? Fun to think about,
yeah,
I guess.
Some of the biggest kryptonite for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu has been strong American wrestling.
Yeah.
So, and at that point in the game, Frank Gotch was, well, no joke. You should be able to read his book and figure that out with his. So, I'll take Frank Gotch.
Another question. It would be a good discussion. Who is ruining who's running WWE? Vince McMahon or Mattel? Not sponsor, specifically Mattel. Well, it's not Mattel. It still is all going to go back to Vince McMahon. I mean, if Vince McMahon really wanted to tell Mattel to screw off, he could. He's not going to, but that does not mean Mattel is controlling WWE. And WWE is not doomed because they released Bryan Danielson, everybody. Okay? I realize the whole thing is stupid, but life goes on. I wish Bryan Danielson was still with WWE. I wish he had not been released, but life goes on. Yeah, it's going to continue.
How many times does Vince McMahon actually make the call to fire someone? Which, you know, for those people that are that upset, again, yes, is it crappy that Bryan Danielson is the scapegoat? Yes. Is it just as possible he'll be back at some point? Yeah, it is possible that he is going to be back just because of the nature of what went down. And yeah, like, you know, you can tell Mattel in USA when they want three-hour shows and they want certain things on there to screw off. But, you know, unfortunately, that's the world you live in when you're trying to be so diverse and you have to appease so many people, including your wife who's running for senator in Connecticut.
If John Cena put somebody in a crippler crossface and Mattel got mad and put pressure on Vince to fire John Cena. Okay, when that happens, we'll talk. Bryan Danielson getting fired for choking Justin Roberts with his tie is a really stupid thing that happened in WWE, and the company is still going to gross $500 million this year. So I realize people are very upset. I think this whole thing is stupid as well, but let's not blow all of this completely out of proportion, which, unfortunately, and I'm not speaking of this particular email. I've gotten a lot of other emails that have just, people have gone off the deep end. Just everybody relax. It's all going to be fine. I don't know. What was the actual length of the original pay-per-view broadcast of WrestleMania 26? I don't know if this is a trick question. I don't know. 4 hours?
Was 22 Hollywood? I would assume it would be 4 hours, yeah.
I don't know. I was there. It was a four-hour show, if I recall correctly. So, I don't know.
Well, I guess 4 plus was there, the pre-match, maybe, all right, call it 4 hours and 15 minutes.
Maybe 4 hours. Well, I mean, sure. Let's see. Actually, I was going to do some more emails, but we should actually do some of the news bits here as we're running out of time. What do you think of Percy Watson on NXT?
Okay. I didn't get a chance to see that much Florida Championship Wrestling, so I can't fathom what the team of Darren Young and Percy Watson must have been like. But he's one of those guys that I know people hate to hear this. In my wrestling world, there's a place for fools, for people like Santino. Obviously, I would want them to, the comedy be a little bit different and used better, but I have a place in my life, at least currently right now, for Percy Watson.
He's a great man. A great man. This coming Friday, GoFightLive.tv, ROH, has their next big pay-per-view. You can go to ROHWrestling.com for more. They're going to have the go-home show tomorrow on HDNet. Make sure you check it out. I've been really enjoying the ROH TV. I've been watching it, reviewing it in the newsletter and that sort of thing, and it's a very good TV show. And support their next pay-per-view if you get a chance. It's $9.99. And if you love pro wrestling and independent wrestling and seeing some of the stars of tomorrow, the ROH pay-per-views are always pretty cool, and as noted, not a lot of money, and you're always going to get like 4 hours of solid action there. Big Bang pay-per-view was very, very good, so check it out at GoFightLive.tv. We're going to talk a little bit more news after the break and then wrap it up. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. And before we wrap it up today, Mike, tell us a little bit about the life and times of Grizzly Smith, who passed away a couple of days ago.
Yeah, Grizzly Smith, probably going to be best known for being the father of Jake the Snake Roberts and also the father of Sam Houston and Rockin' Robin, who was the former WWE Women's Champion. As people that saw Beyond the Mat, no. Obviously, he and Jake Roberts were not close. There's always been a lot of talk over Grizzly Smith's relationship with young girls. Again, in Beyond the Mat and Jake Roberts' story, you'll hear all about that. Even on his WWE Pick Your Poison DVD, you can find out more about that stuff. But as far as wrestling's concerned, a member of the Kentuckians, arguably a team that belongs in the Hall of Fame alongside the Assassins, who were their main rivals throughout the South. But I merely made a lot of his name in Mid-South and working with Bill Watts as a road agent, and also traveled over to WCW when that was all over with as well. So, yeah, Grizzly Smith died at, I believe, 78 from complications stemming from Alzheimer's.
And that is pretty much it for this week, everybody. Don't forget, as soon as this show goes off the air, the TNA Slammiversary pay-per-view is going to be starting. We'll be doing results and ongoing play-by-play of that at WrestlingObserver.com. You can head over there and get the results if you don't choose to buy the pay-per-view. And believe me, you won't be alone. That, of course, is coming up in just a moment. Dave Meltzer and I will be up later on tonight with a brand new edition of Wrestling Observer Radio, talking all the results of that show, the fallout. More on Daniel Bryan. And a lot more. And, of course, tomorrow night, Raw with the follow-up to the NXT angle. Find out what they do to follow that up and lead into the Fatal 4-Way pay-per-view, which is coming up next Sunday. And, of course, next Sunday is when we shall return here live with a brand-new show. So check it out. Check out WrestlingObserver.com. All the latest news in pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And if the show is ever preempted, you can listen to it live streaming at WrestlingObserver.com at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 Eastern on Sunday. So thanks again, Mike. Thanks again, everybody, for listening. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you again after a while. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.